Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Voice of the Fans. I am your co-host, Cleavy Wonder, filling in for Killer Cam. And I'm happy to say the wait is over. The NFL season starts anew tomorrow with the Patriots and the Chiefs, and it feels like Christmas. I guess it actually feels a little bit more like Christmas Eve because we're not getting the whole schedule. We're just getting the one game, but it's NFL football nonetheless, and I couldn't be happier that it's back. Let's start the show with a quick recap of some of the bigger stories of the NFL preseason. Number one, most notably, being my man Colin Kaepernick. Question has to be, has Colin Kaepernick seen his final days in the league? And unfortunately, from where I'm sitting, it looks like, unfortunately, yes. There have been various scenarios around the NFL where a quality backup quarterback was needed. And when Colin's name got mentioned, we either saw teams make really strange moves or come up with excuses and explanations as to why he wasn't a good fit or why he shouldn't be there. We saw in Baltimore Joe Flacco go down very early. They needed a backup. It's been said by Ray Lewis just recently that the reason he didn't get an opportunity for the job there was that his girlfriend sent out a racist tweet. So that's just one of the scenarios. In Miami, they went to the television booth and grabbed Jay Cutler as opposed to giving him a tryout. And we've heard some people give the excuse that, well, that was because he was wearing a Fidel Castro T-shirt and they didn't think that the fans in Miami would appreciate that too much and wouldn't embrace him as their quarterback. We saw in Denver that they brought back Brock Osweiler to be their backup quarterback. Now, this is after Brock Osweiler had left Denver, went to Houston for $72 million for 1 year. They then traded him to the Cleveland Browns that only won one game last year. Cleveland then cut him, opting to go with a rookie from Notre Dame as their starting quarterback, DeShone Kizer. I mean, how much more can you disrespect a quarterback than Brock Osweiler has been disrespected? Not in a bad way, just in letting you know that he's not really fit for what it is he's trying to do. To say for Denver that Colin Kaepernick wouldn't have been a good fit, again, somewhat of a mystery. In Indianapolis, Andrew Luck has not thrown a single pass, will not start week one for the Colts. Certainly, their starting quarterback is, you know, should certainly be pushed. And they even went so far as to trade for Jacoby Brissett, New England's backup. Again, baffling when you have someone that's been to the Super Bowl, been a Pro Bowl quarterback, not even getting a look over there. My beloved Seattle Seahawks was the one team that was the closest to signing him. They brought him in for a workout. They thought that their locker room environment was something that would be commensurate with what he believes in, that he wouldn't have any issues there. But ultimately, he came and went without a contract. Seattle has since decided that Austin Davis is a better option at backup quarterback after cutting Trevon Boykin. So if anything happens to Russell Wilson, wow, I'm a little bit nervous. Would Colin Kaepernick be a better option? Certainly looks like it on paper, but again, they were hesitant to do so. Jacksonville has gone back and forth between Blake Bortles and their backup quarterback. Certainly bringing another veteran quarterback in to give them a little bit of competition couldn't have hurt anything. You know, 6-7 scenarios of which no team has decided to take a chance on Colin Kaepernick. And when you think about it, you have to think that that's either because they think he's too much of a distraction, giving all of the attention that his protests bring, which is the whole point of his protests in the beginning in the first place, or ownership just frowns upon the fact that he kneels for the flag. So in either one of those scenarios, it's unfortunate, but the way those things play themselves out, it doesn't look like Colin Kaepernick is going to get a job in the NFL. And as you all know, the older you get, the less likely it is for you to get back into the game. And we've already seen injuries and other scenarios wherein he should be at least a consideration. It hasn't been. So his days are over. Another big story in the NFL preseason was the Zeke Elliott suspension. Arbitrator upheld the 6-game suspension. He will get to play in game one because the decision that came down on the suspension took a little longer than anticipated. So he gets to play the first game, but he is going to have to sit out 6. They are going to try this in Supreme Court. However, precedent tells us that the NFL always wins. Once you try to appeal a lower court's decision, whether you win or lose, ultimately you get to an appellate court where they say the CBA clearly states that the commissioner's office has unilateral opportunity and control over all suspensions. So even if they think they have a strong case in court, even if they think that some of the evidence that has been brought to the NFL's attention wasn't properly disseminated, it makes no difference. The collective bargaining agreement in itself states that the commissioner is the judge and jury. So whatever happens, happens, and you just have to live with the consequences. The arbitrator sometimes can give you a few less games within your suspension, but unfortunately that was not the case in this Ezekiel Elliott suspension, and he is not going to play any less games. He's going to miss the 6 games, unfortunately. Other preseason stories, injury. The injury bug hit a few teams really rather hard. Down in Miami, as I mentioned previously, speaking about Colin Kaepernick, the Ryan Tannehill injury. Losing your starting quarterback for the entire season, a year after you made the playoffs, is a pretty crushing blow. I'm not quite sure how they're going to respond and rally around Jay Cutler, but without question, that was the biggest injury of the preseason. The second biggest injury of the preseason came at the hands of my Seattle Seahawks in the form of left tackle George Fant with the torn ACL. And unfortunately, it was looking really good for the Seahawks. Offensive line, they were finally getting a chance to be a cohesive unit, have some of the same players out there playing the same positions as opposed to just kind of playing musical chairs as they have been in the last couple of years. So having that anchor to protect Russell Wilson's blind side was going to be a big part of what the Seattle Seahawks are trying to do. And so unfortunately, that's going to be a major blow. Another one that we saw was Julian Edelman over in New England, which is basically Tom Brady's go-to guy, his main man when he's not throwing Gronkowski. So it's one of those security blankets that, you know, CB12, the GOAT, as they call him, would rather have on his side, was really a big reason that people were predicting the Patriots to perhaps run the table and go 16-0 this year. But without him in the lineup, I seriously doubt that that's going to happen. So another big blow. There were also some surprise cuts and free agent movements that went on during the preseason. A lot of teams were really trimming the fat. Again, my Seattle Seahawks cut their backup quarterback, Trayvon Boykin, made just a few too many mistakes in the preseason. Pete Carroll was not big on throwing interceptions, and he threw way too many. So it was time for him to leave town. The Washington Redskins let Matt Jones go. I guess someone going for a youth movement over there in the backfield. We had a few kickers that couldn't find the spot, and that was Mr. Aguayo, a second-round pick down there in Tampa Bay. They finally decided to cut bait with that experiment. That's unfortunate because I had never seen a kicker go that high before, and then to have such a disappointing start to his career is, I guess, funny to me. I often refer to kickers as shankopotamus, so the fact that he wasn't able to find his way is, you know, a little bit embarrassing and a little bit funny at the same time. Also, longtime kicker Mike Maven had the same fate, so, I mean, you know, maybe those guys can bounce back, but as of now, it looks like they're out of the league. Mr. Salta in Chicago, Victor Cruz, without Alshon Jeffrey on the other side or Brandon Marshall, it was looking like a done deal that Victor Cruz is going to be able to find a spot within the Bears lineup. But, wow, must have just had an awful training camp, and they decided to go with the movement as well as their running back, Jeremy Langford, who was a big bruiser at Michigan State and had a few solid games last year, especially early in the year. He was one of my fantasy guys, which is how I know that. And, thought that he was going to make the cut, but it's a cold, cold world out there. Cold, cold world out there in the NFL. So sometimes whatever it is that you think is going to happen, it backfires on you and goes the other way. So those were some of the free agent and surprise cuts from the preseason. So now we move on to our NFL predictions for the season. What is it that I am thinking is going to happen? As we go through these divisions, it looks pretty much like you would think. When I look at the NFC East, I'm picking the Philadelphia Eagles to win that division. Again, with Ezekiel Elliott having the 6-game suspension, it's going to have more of an impact on Dallas' offense than I think they care to admit. Of course, we have some confidence in Dak Prescott, given what he was able to accomplish in his rookie season. We know Dez Bryant is a competitor. We know they have a great offensive line. So, those factors will be in play. But at the end of the day, I think Philadelphia has more talent than the other teams in the league. The New York Giants not looking that strong with their running game. Brandon Marshall coming over to accompany Odell Beckham Jr. That was a good move. I definitely think that could pay dividends. And we know they have Landon Collins running around there at safety. He's an absolute beast. So there's something to be said for that. Washington Redskins, they go back and forth with the Kirk Cousins thing, whether they want to keep him, whether they don't. They clearly don't think he's a franchise quarterback, or they would have given him the money the same way Detroit gave Stafford the money, the same way all teams give the players they think is their franchise quarterback the money eventually. So obviously they don't think that highly of him. And then they take away weapons like DeSean Jackson and the other tight end that also left in free agency. So I don't see them making much noise in the NFC East either, which is why, actually by default, I actually give the division to the Philadelphia Eagles. The NFC North, we all know it's a runaway. The Packers on top. Minnesota, I'm not even going to say a close second. I'm going to say they'll be in second place. I think Green Bay is poised to have a pretty good year this year. I'm thinking 12-4, 11-5, competing for the 1 or 2 seed, which will probably determine if they are able to get to the Super Bowl. We know that the Detroit Lions are somewhat in a rebuilding process. I'm not sure if they really understand or have carved out a real identity for themselves. They're not really a great defensive team. They're not really an up-tempo offensive team, although they do have Matt Stafford and a few weapons that he can go to. For the most part, they're really rather vanilla, so I don't really see them making a whole lot of noise. Chicago Bears, complete total tear down and rebuild. They do have the running back Howard. He should get 1,300 or 1,400 yards if he stays healthy, because they can't really do anything else. They brought the quarterback over from the Texans, Tampa Bay, and Glennon, but they're really all just waiting on pins and needles to see when it's Mitch Trubisky time. They moved way up in the draft to get him, so it's not like they don't have to put him on the field. They have to put him on the field sooner than later. And this team is going to be bad, so we'll probably see him by week 7 or week 8. As I go to the NFC South, I got to take the Atlanta Falcons to repeat as division winners. I think there is going to be a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover. I do think that some teams are going to be gunning for them to kind of use them as a barometer as to where they are as a team and in the season. I do think there is going to be a little bit of a slow off from the coordinator, Mr. Shanahan, leaving and going out to San Francisco, bringing in the former Washington University of Washington coach Steve Sarkisian to call plays. Not a bad idea. You know, very similar philosophy in a lot of ways. So they'll still be somewhat up-tempo. I'm not quite sure if they'll be quite as explosive as they were last year, but they will have an opportunity to make some plays, and ultimately Atlanta will win that division. I do think that coming up in second place is going to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, though. I do think they're not going to completely turn the corner, but they will get into the playoffs this year, and it will be mostly because they've given Jameis Winston a few more playmakers. They've given in the tight end, O.J. Howard. They brought in DeSean Jackson. That defense has gotten a little bit stronger. I believe they recently signed T.J. Ward, so that was a huge pickup. So a lot of those close games that they were losing before, I think that they're going to win a few more of those and enough to get into the playoffs. Carolina, I think they're just going to come up just short. I want to say probably a 9-7 spot for them. I am interested to see how they use their two new weapons on offense, that being Christian McCaffrey in the backfield. I do have him in one of my fantasy leagues. Had to take him. Surprise to everybody, but I had to take him. And also Samuel that they added from Ohio State to kind of give their offense a little bit of a boost. You know, they've had the Stewarts, you know, in the past, and you know, kind of a very, I don't want to say boring, but a very predictable offense predicated on what Cam Newton can do. He does have his, you know, his Benjamin to throw to, so they could make some noise, but I don't really see them having a huge impact. 9-7 is, I think, as far as they can go with that. The New Orleans Saints, one of the more interesting teams in the league. You never want to say that Drew Brees is past his prime, so as long as you keep replenishing, you know, the tool shed with more weapons. There's always, you know, something that can be done. You bring in Adrian Peterson, he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. A lot of people would like to say that he probably doesn't have anything left in the tank. We'll know very quickly. We'll know sooner than later whether he's going to be a good fit there or not. They still feel that they're okay with Ingram. And they, you know, they have Mr. Thomas to throw the ball to. So I think 8-8 is about as good as we can expect from them. In the NFC West, of course, I have to go with my Seattle Seahawks to win that division. They have retooled at the running back position. Excuse me. And they've also retooled their secondary with fresh corners, people to replace, or at least give some time for Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor to take a play or two off. So they have some rookies in waiting. They recently added Sheldon Richardson on the defensive line to wreak havoc along with Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill. So I definitely feel this is an 11-5. 12-4 might be a bit of a stretch, but definitely 11-5 team. And we'll see what they can do once they get into the playoffs. And within that division, there's not a lot of competition. I won't say that they get the golden ticket like New England Patriots get every year, but San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Arizona are all in a rebuilding process. Two of those teams have brand new coaches. One is only 32 years old, although that, let's not, you know, take anything away from him just because of his age. He definitely earned the job. They interviewed lots of other people and felt he was the most qualified. And, you know, why not do something new? Why not do something fresh? Why not do something innovative? So, you know, hats off to the Los Angeles Rams for hiring Mr. McVay, but one of his projects is Jared Goff, and we haven't seen a whole lot out of him. Their offense in general, Tavon Austin, not an explosive receiver. They went and traded for Sammy Watkins. He's been injury prone, so I don't know how much we can really depend on him to make a difference as far as impacting their offense. I had Todd Gurley in fantasy football last year. As you can see, I'm still a little bit bitter. He had a very off year. Perhaps he can have a bounce back one and, you know, get back in my good graces. I'm not sure, but I think there'll be a lot of feeding the ball to Todd Gurley. The other thing that I'm concerned with over there with the Rams is that Aaron Donald still has not come to camp. So he's going to be a no-show all year. That's definitely going to have a dramatic impact and effect on how their front four looks. And without that defensive pressure, they're really not a very, very good team. So, again, not much competition in the division. the 49ers, really a really work in progress. Not sure what direction they're going in. I think that other than the Jets, they're probably tanking as much as anybody, but in a good way. You know, they're trying to tank in a professional way. They're not just letting out all their players go like the Jets are, but that's for another time. The Arizona Cardinals, I think they're just a little long in the tooth at pretty much every position except for maybe in their secondary, and of course they're all row back David Johnson. I wasn't so fortunate enough to get him in any of my leagues this year. Number one overall pick in most people's fantasy draft. So other than David Johnson, we see the time getting short for Fitzgerald. We're not sure about the other receivers as far as if they can really catch. They pretty much stripped down their linebackers and D linemen. They have a few corners. They did draft Buda Baker at safety this year. They do still have the Honey Badger and Patrick Peterson. So strength of their team is still their secondary, but not a very good team. Seattle wins that division. As we go to the AFC East, as I was referring to earlier, the golden ticket, the New England Patriots will win that division probably by late November. It'll be all wrapped up in a bow, and they may or may not have to play Tom Brady. No, just kidding. Of course, they'll have to play out all the games, but it's not going to be close, especially with a team that has the potential of potentially going undefeated this year. We're really not looking at much of a competition in the likes of the Jets, who have already let everyone know that they're already looking forward to whether they get Sam Darnold or not next year in the draft. They want the worst record in the league to have the best opportunity to do so. Not necessarily a good move in my part, because more often than not, quarterbacks that are chosen number one overall don't pan out. You get your, for every Peyton Manning, there's a David Carr. So it's really rolling the dice to try and tank on purpose just to get a quarterback that you're looking for when it's not an exact science. So that's the best philosophy. But again, this is what the New England Patriots have to look forward to playing. The Buffalo Bills went with Tyrod Taylor for one more year. Don't know if he's going to be the long-term solution there. They have taken one of his biggest weapons away, although, to be quite honest, Watkins was not on the field that often, or as often as I think that he should have been to make that type of impact. They lost a few players. They traded Reggie Ragland on defense. Player from Alabama that got hurt last year had to sit out. They still have Shady, though. And when you have Shady McCoy, you always have a chance, but you have a chance to be mediocre and not make the playoffs. The Miami Dolphins, playoff team last year, starting quarterback Jake Heller. I think that's really all I need to say about that. I wish I had more to say, especially with it being a man killer Cam's team. Sorry he's not here to defend him, but I have nothing nice to say about him. To be quite honest, I'm be surprised if they win more than 7 games. So there you have it for that AFC East. That's, once again, why New England, you know, they already start out in the playoffs. When you already start the season out in the playoffs, it's kind of hard to, you know, it's a little bit easier to understand why they get to the Super Bowl all the time. Just saying. In the AFC North, I'm taking the Pittsburgh Steelers to win that division. I like the way they've gotten Le'Veon Bell back into camp after not signing him to a long-term contract. His philosophy was simply, why should I play in the preseason? Why should I go through all those workouts, all those reps? Why should I, you know, put my body in harm's way? If you're not going to give me what I think I'm worth or what I deserve, then, you know, hey, I'm going to show up on my own schedule, on my own time. Came in, signed the tender. He'll be ready to go. Martavis Bryant back from the year suspension. Hopefully he's been able to exercise some of the demons that he had and can be back on the field as a productive player. T.J. Watt, little J.J., he's starting a linebacker. So I got some pretty high aspirations for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think they can do some things. Cincinnati, on the other hand, I like the way that they've retooled some of their offensive weapons. They went out and got Joe Mixon, the much maligned running back from Oklahoma. I think it's only a matter of time, probably mid-season, before he's starting to get some of the touches that Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill were once getting. And so long as he can hold on to the ball, that has been one of the problems that I have seen with Mr. Mixon, is that he has a tendency to put the ball on the ground. So as long as he can get that problem taken care of, I think that he'll be an added addition to that running game. I also think that they added quite a bit of, well, that would be an understatement. They added the fastest man in the combine, in the history of the combine, to their receiving core in John Ross III. So I think that he will definitely help to stretch the field. I think that he will definitely help with getting A.J. Green more one-on-one coverages. So I think there's an upgrade there. I don't think that they're quite a playoff team, but I think that they're really, really close. And if things, you know how funny the ball bounces around the NFL, if things go a certain way, they have a chance to actually get in there and, you know, perhaps, I don't know, win a game. They've never won a game, at least not in the Marvin Jones era, or rather the Marvin Lewis era. But, yeah. They're right kind of on that borderline. Baltimore Ravens, I think they just had too many injuries to start out the year. Joe Flacco is not really 100% healthy. Says he is. He says he'll be ready to go week one, but not a lot of practice. I don't have a whole lot of optimism for the Ravens this year. I didn't think they addressed the running game as much as they should have. They did bring over Jeremy Maclin as a receiver to help out with Mike Wallace, but again, I think maybe this is 5 years ago that receiving core would sound really, really scary, but in 2017, not so much. Cleveland Browns, work in progress, I think a little bit better than most people think. It's unfortunate that the number one overall pick, Myles Garrett, got hurt, sprained his ankle yesterday, and is going to miss a couple of weeks. I really wanted to see what type of impact he was going to have, and that is their young defense, as you recall, they got Jamie Collins last year. Their young defense can kind of come together and hold those guys in some games, take a little bit of pressure off of DeShone Kizer, who really honestly is not ready to start, although he's been given, you know, the keys to the kingdom, you know, kind of, you know, by process of elimination, you know, most definitely. If they were able to give him a little bit more help on the defensive side of the ball, I think that he would mature a lot faster. But, again, they'll have way more wins than they had last year. I think I'll go out on a limb and say 6 wins, 5 probably more realistic. In the AFC South, I am taking the Tennessee Titans to win that division. Marcus Mariota is finally going to put it together. He's got a weapon over there in Corey Davis, and also they picked up Eric Decker. I like that 1-2 punch with the running game to Marco Murray and Mr. Henry from Alabama. I think they could do some things. I think 10 wins is not unrealistic for them, should Mariota happen to stay healthy. And if Corey Davis is the real deal, if he's not quite who we think he's going to be, somewhat of a pretender, it may be a little bit more of a challenge. But I do think that they're right on the doorstep. And winning the AFC South, not a very difficult thing to do. The reason that I say that is because the Houston Texans, although they let Brock Osweiler go, which was an admission that they made a mistake, which a lot of teams don't do. A lot of teams stick with quarterbacks and other, you know, players at skill positions because they just don't want to admit they're wrong. Texans admit they were wrong real quick into the process, took the loss, ate the $38 million, and kept it rolling. But they still didn't really address the quarterback with someone that you really feel confident with, in Mr. Tom Savage. Although they did draft Deshaun Watson, I think that he probably won't see the field this year. He may see the field a little bit later, but the reason I don't think he'll see the field is because I think that the Texans' defense is good enough to keep them in most games and that they'll always be somewhat in the playoff hunt. And so his opportunity to take the field, unless Savage just really messes up really, really bad, he'll always be the better option for a team that's almost in the playoffs. So that's why I'm saying that. However, if Deshaun gets his opportunity and really starts to tear it up, they have a good chance to win the division. If that scenario doesn't play itself out, it's the Tennessee Titans to win. Because also the Colts and the Jaguars are so bad. But let's go with the Colts first. Again, I'm sorry Killer Cam is not here to defend his guy, Andrew Luck. But Andrew Luck is starting to look like he may not play for 3 or 4 weeks into the season. Hasn't thrown a pass all preseason. We have no idea what that guy's shoulder is like. From what they say, mentally he's ready to go, his spirits are up, but until you're out there, we really, really, really don't know anything. And so with that, also, on the other side, Jacksonville and Leonard Fournette. I think Leonard Fournette can do some things. I think he can be a positive, stabilizing force for that offense, but again, you have to realize how bad the team really actually is. Blake Bortles. We have come to the conclusion that he is not a franchise quarterback. They have come to that conclusion that he's not a franchise quarterback. They really don't have anything else that they can do.